Good morning. I'm very happy to be here to talk about something that hopefully I'm passionate about, and hopefully you're also passionate about as well. And what I'm talking about today is the role of public transportation in saving lives. No relationships to disclose, and I also want to acknowledge my co-author, Fernando Wilson, and our funding organization, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, Public Health Law Program. So APHA also has a very strong interest in this issue, and put out this publication, and for which I took out this snippet, which is How Transportation Impacts Health. And I wanted to start here to frame the picture. And it's a somewhat linear process in that it starts with how we decide to invest the limited transportation dollars that we have. Currently, over 95% of the dollars go toward roads. And in some communities, it's even less than that that go toward public transportation. Ultimately, that impacts, because it's the money, it impacts how we use our land, our land use patterns. Is our land designed around complete streets policies, or is it designed around just vehicular transportation? And therefore, not really reasonable access to walking or biking or any other mode of transportation outside of cars. And so this influences our ordinances around zoning laws. And so this influences our travel behavior, and because it gives us a range of options and ultimately our health, and translates into costs. Cars are the unintentional injuries are the fifth leading cause of death in the U.S., and a third of that is due to motor vehicles. It's the leading cause of death for kids. And USA is number one in something, and that is traffic deaths, at least among developed countries. Compared to the roughly 33,000 motor vehicle deaths per year that happen on public roads in the United States, there are less than 150 fatalities on rail and bus combined. That is a 200-fold difference in fatalities. And also, the caveat here is also that most of the rail fatalities are by non-passenger trains. These are actually coal trains, not passenger trains, not Amtrak, but a coal train running into a car or someone that happens to be on the rail. So it makes me curious, what is the relationship between motor vehicle fatalities and use of mass transit? And also specifically, how does the availability of mass transit translate into specifically some quantifiable measure of how much less people will drive if they have available mass transit? And so this is the question that I was very interested in addressing, and so I'm focusing today on the driving behavior because I think that's where it starts, and then we can translate in the traffic fatalities, and then, which was hard enough to do, and then we can translate that into obesity and air pollution, the other kinds of health outcomes that associated with traffic. So we linked the fatality accident record system, which is a census of all traffic fatalities on public roads in the United States from 1982 to 2010, and did a bunch of different ways of trying to, first we used the American Public Transit Association and turned those reports into the database, and that turned out to be not great, but, and then we discovered this Texas Transportation Institute created this wonderful database that has a compilation of publicly available of all sorts of data that's that can be linked to the fatality accident record system, to the census of all of these road fatalities, so that can give you a city level view of the relationship between these two variables. So we end up with the top 96 cities in the continental U.S. with mass transit systems from 1982 to 2010. The TTI has 100 cities in it, but four of them did not have mass transit at some point in that time period. And so what I'm showing you are correlations. Obviously, it's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to show a true causal relationship here. So I'm showing a different graphics to present this relationship, and then ultimately to show the substitution effect, which is the most important, I think, finding here. And this first graphic shows, is very descriptive. It just presents motor vehicle fatality rates by mass transit volume. So the y-axis is the fatality rate per 100,000 population, and then we have time on the x-axis. And we have different levels of, you know, the green bar is cities, you know, like New York City, San Francisco, cities with very high volume of mass transportation, followed by medium levels and very low levels. And so some findings, you know, immediately pop out. One is that the high volume cities have much lower fatality rates for motor vehicle fatalities compared to the medium low. Also, there's a much bigger difference between the high volume cities and the medium and low. And this begins to present one of the main themes here, which is that this is not a linear relationship. We'll present some additional slides here to show that this is a nonlinear relationship, which has important implications. So we have, you know, we know that motor vehicle fatalities have been going down over time due to a lot of great policies, you know, seatbelt laws, airbags, you know, improved safety technology, improved policies for drunk driving. All of these things have contributed to a downward trend, but this trend is a little bit steeper in cities that have mass transit or more mass transit available. So here's another way to look at this relationship, this correlation that we did through a series of analysis, and this is controlling for some other factors that would be associated with motor vehicle fatalities, gas prices, and climate. So we have the mass transit miles traveled as a percent of VMT. So our leftmost column is some predicted values, the ratio, a city that has, you know, essentially no mass transit, and going on in their city relative to road miles, versus, 10% of the traveling is via mass transit, and 20%. And actually the upper end in the United States is 24%. The city, New York City, has a ratio of 24%. So that's our upper level value that we can show here. And then we can show different ways of showing this rate, the number of motor vehicle fatalities that would be predicted over this time period, 1982 to 2010, and as a rate as well. So cities, there would be 148,000, would have been 148,000 deaths, and then it goes down as you get, to 106,000, and then 20% you see 38,000. And what you kind of glean from that is that it's not linear. It accelerates pretty quickly from about 42,000 fewer deaths from 0 to 10, but then it jumps, pretty dramatically, about 67 or 62, more than 60,000. Yeah.
Nancy, just a quick question. Is that one person traveling is a mile? Or some of these are vehicles
that
have two or three people in it?
Yeah, it's... Well, that's why I show the rate of per billion vehicle miles traveled to the right as a rate. But yeah, so it's So I think that led us to creating something to show the substitution effect and to present this a little bit clearer. So here we have the per capita, more on an individual basis, per capita vehicle miles traveled, and also per capita mass transit miles traveled. And the first thing we had to do was a two-step process. First, we had to figure out, with mass transit, if when someone's traveling via mass transit, how many fewer miles are they traveling per car in a car? And it turns out that the substitution effect is 1 to 3. 1 mile of mass transit equals 3 fewer miles traveled in a car. And some other literature shows that people that travel in mass transit, they're walking. That substitution effect is largely through walking. They're not taking the train and getting off and then renting a car. They're walking to their destination, walking to the train stations. And so, in fact, mass transit users walk 19 minutes per day on average. So the blue line here shows this very nonlinear effect of how many the predicted decrease in vehicle miles traveled per capita. You can see it really ramps up very quickly in cities that have more availability, because then it becomes easier to access. And then the red line shows the predicted number of motor vehicle fatalities. You know, tracks closely, but not exactly to that, because it's it accelerates also very quickly. So it starts out at a little bit over 140,000 and just decreases down to just over 100,000. So that's about 40,000 lives that can be saved in this particular scenario. So another way to try to translate this finding is to say, well, first, what are the top 10 regions for mass transit? And then can we find a way to translate this so that another way to translate this to show the effect? And so New York City, the New York-Newark area, has 1,100 transit miles per capita annually, meaning people in that area travel in mass transit 1,100 miles per year. And San Francisco, the wonderful city we're staying here now, is in second place. And you can see 10th place is Portland, Oregon, which is not that large of a city, but a wonderful city for a case study, because it's not very large, but it has a plethora of mass transit options to enable people to that option, some other option. So we can do different scenarios based on that, just to present these findings in a different way, or just show this effect in different types of ways. So one scenario analysis would be, how many lives would have been saved if the other regions in the study had the same mass transit use per capita, say, as New York City? It's not realistic, but what would happen? What would it be like if those other cities that already have mass transit were able to ramp it up to that level? And from 1982 to 2010, that would translate into 79,000 lives would have been saved. Or just in 2010 alone, just under 2,000 lives saved. So about around half the total. So this suggests that mass transit has a real effect on driving behavior, which we know, and that in fact that it's a kind of a nonlinear effect. The more that we develop this and invest in it, the more options that are available, the more people will walk or do some other safer form of transportation, because there's not quite too many pedestrian or biking fatalities, except when they're hit by a car. And so the U.S. Once had the best public transportation system in the world. I think people might not even realize that there was a great documentary. It's kind of dated, but it still has the same factual information that kind of describes the history of the mass transportation in the United States. In fact, small cities like Lincoln, Nebraska, and Fort Worth, Texas, had cable cars running up and down, just like San Francisco. And the United States, unlike the European and Asian countries, decided to tear those up and destroy them and invest in roads, and those other countries that decided to invest or reinvest in their mass transit system. So to do this, we need incentives that make driving more expensive and public transit more attractive. And I like to organize this in a way of saying, policies need to be a carrot and a stick. We need to have options for people so that we're not just saying, making it unpleasant, but we want to provide, feasible options for people to do something other than drive a car. And so you need rail, you need complete streets policies are very important, bike sharing, bike lanes, bus rapid transit. And just see, if you're not from Newark or one of those top cities in transit, you probably felt how much more you've walked just in the time that you spend in San Francisco, being in this city. But there also needs to be lack of the removing that subsidization of public roads to make it those options, those carrots, more attractive to eat. And so that includes not having free public roads, maybe more toll roads, charging for congestion. This is a policy that London put in place. They charge people to drive into the city around the perimeter, and it's resulted in significantly more people carpooling and taking their amazing public transportation system. That's translated into lower air pollution and also much fewer fatalities within the city. Roads, oil, and gasoline are very, very heavily subsidized in the United States. Vehicle inspection or vehicle standards, and then experiments that are undergoing in the United States and other parts of the world are tiered, either toll lanes, so you pay a different rate depending on what lane that you're driving in. Some lanes are more expensive than others. Parking, so that parking is dynamic. They're doing this experiment in some cities where as parking kind of fills up, it becomes more expensive, and then as people start leaving, and the price goes down. Doing the same thing with vehicle registration insurance, charging people for how much they drive rather than some other demographic just characteristics. So mass transit saves lives. It's not a straight one-to-one relationship. It's a nonlinear relationship. This is primarily through the substitution effect. People driving less as a result of having this option. Increasing use and scope of mass transit should be branded as a critical public health tool to reduce injuries and death. And this is, you're seeing this this message coming through more and loud, clear from APHA and from the CDC. Policies need to increase the cost of driving and improve physical and economic access to public transit. Thank you.